Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Who am I and how am I feeling? I'm Clive Owen and I'm great, thanks. What if businesses could really understand how their customers feel, act on it, and make them feel better? It's a thing. It's SAP Experience Management. For more, go to sap.com/XM.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
All right, Pelicans fans, welcome to another edition of The Bird Calls, the official podcast of TheBirdRights.com. I am David Grubb, filling in for Preston Ellis, who is off doing many magical things in the Magic Kingdom, I'm certain, at this time. With me, as usual, Kevin Berrios and Editor-in-Chief Ollie Cosell. And also with us, contributor David Fisher. How are we doing tonight, guys?
I'm still riding a little bit of a Zion wave, but I got to admit, the national takes today, I didn't expect it to get that ridiculous.
I'm Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. We help men deal with the life changes triggered by divorce, such as child custody and property division, among many others. But life changes also occur after divorce. These changes can make parts of your existing court order irrelevant or harder to follow. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell. We're a partner men can count on.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
What about you guys?
I was at work, so I kind of missed it all. I kind of got glimpses here and there, so I think it's probably worse than the little bit that I saw, but the bit that I saw was pretty dumb. I don't really care. I mean, we know what the jump has been all season in regards to us, so I don't really care what they say.
I just find it, I think it's just funny that we've already jumped, you know, we're just barely 24 hours past the lottery, and we've already jumped to Zion's options, you know, as to what he's going to do. Is he going to go back to Duke? Is he going to threaten the Pelicans and ask for a trade? And I think the perception by other people is not the perception that basketball people have of the Pelicans anymore. Just to be brief, it's just, you know, you see Max Kellerman this morning again reciting this thing of the franchise is cheap. The franchise doesn't want to do this. They're still the second fiddle to the Saints. Well, where have you been the last couple of months where this restructuring has been going on? And why are you continuing to push this narrative? And then the other part was the other national things like Deadspin saying, like, you know, the Pelicans get rewarded for ruining Anthony Davis's career. Look, man, the Clippers used to get number one picks falling out the wazoo. You know, bad teams, the Cavs got number one picks that they squandered year after year and no one said anything. But for some reason, to let it be the Pelicans gain any type of favor, then all of a sudden the NBA, the lottery system is already broken.
Yeah, but Kellerman's not the one I had issue with. It was definitely Colin Coward. I mean, you just can't say what he says, I feel like. You can't just be, like, recommending that the kid, first-round pick, all he's ever wanted to do is get to the NBA to basically, you know, do whatever it takes, even sitting out the season, you know, not signing with the Pelicans, whatever. That's just absurd. I mean, Fish, did you catch any of this today?
I caught some of it, but the thing is that the Pelicans have been a vastly – more competitive franchise over the last 6 to 7 years than the Knicks and the Lakers. Just because it's a flashy market shouldn't be driving it. Like, their actual argument against New Orleans has nothing to do with basketball. It has nothing, even if, you know, we admit that, yes, the franchise has underperformed. The Lakers had three number two picks in the last 5 years. They signed LeBron James. They still missed the playoffs this year. The last time the Lakers made the playoffs was Anthony Davis's rookie year. Mm-hmm. The Pelicans have made the playoffs twice since then, despite all of their injuries and without any of the kind of lottery luck that the Lakers have had over that period of time. So it's nothing more than them just wanting to funnel players to markets. And I think it's not only just lazy and boring, but it's the fact that it's actually counterproductive to the, like, what the NBA's business model should be. The NBA's business model should be, let's succeed everywhere. Because you haven't heard, is Drew Brees going to force his way to the Giants? You haven't heard anything about Aaron Rodgers trying to – Green Bay doesn't even, like, count as a city compared to New Orleans. Like, it's that small. And there's no problem with him being there and being awesome. So that's a whole nother
bag. Yeah, but as you alluded to, the crux of the problem is the fact that it's nothing basketball related, right? It has all to do with – for writers, it's page clicks on the internet. For a lot of these sports, you know, radio hosts, David knows as well, it's how many listeners you can attract or the audience you have to appeal to. And that's solely what it is. You know, it's basically propaganda in a sense. I mean, misinformation, whatever you want to call it. So I just am saddened that our society has even, you know,
and it's
crumbled
not
a
to
little
me.
Bit. Fallen to, what's that, David?
It's just, to me, it's not funneling teams to certain markets. There's something, and I'm not a conspiracy person, and I'm not a person who's paranoid, but there's something in particular about New Orleans in the basketball realm that strikes people this way. Because everybody was fine with Zion going to Atlanta. Everybody was fine with Zion, you know, New York or L.A. or whomever. It only became an issue when it became New Orleans. You know, so I think that that's the thing, is there's something inherent about them not caring. Part of that has to do with the fact that we don't have a strong local media representing us. The fact that, you know, on the national level, what writer do we have who's based out of New Orleans, who's respected on a national level to tell the story of what's going on here? And
Marcus,
I think that
is just throwing them under the bus all the time from Baton
Rouge,
man.
So, I mean, it's stuff from distance, and it's people lobbing grenades who have not been here, who have not, and like I said, all four of us will admit to what we've seen as the screw ups of this franchise. But at the same time, how is that any different than what's going on in cities like Orlando or Washington or, like you said, New York or LA or the, you know, both LAs or, you know, there? It's what happens in basketball or any other team sport. Teams that are run poorly tend to have bad results. And for a long time, the Pelicans were run poorly. But that doesn't mean you never get the opportunity to not be run poorly. I mean,
apparently it does.
But the thing is that that's not the case, because the Pelicans just, number one, they just signed all of the media's golden boy in David Griffin that they said can turn around everything. Mm-hmm. And now they're just ignoring that. And they... Mm-hmm. They have taken the steps to work on the medical side with bringing in Aaron Nelson. And the thing is that the Pelicans, if you're talking about just from a basketball side, the Pelicans are the one of, if not the most attractive place for Zion to arrive because of the expected return in an Anthony Davis trade in terms of assets. And if we're looking down the line, if timelines don't match up and Drew wants to move on, the return from him, they have a better expected set of assets to build a team around Zion than the Lakers or the Knicks do. Because honestly, the Pelicans are going to ransack them for assets when they trade Anthony Davis. If they trade him to either of those locations. And so pretty much it's just a sexy market. But going back to, you mentioned Atlanta. Atlanta's a terrible town, man. You see what they're...
Oh, they never supported
like.
The Hawks. Dominique years, you name it. Yeah.
You see what their stadium looks like when they're supporting the Falcons. Their brand new stadium's half empty all the time. The Hawks games, despite the fact that they have an awesome environment and they have, I can't remember his name, but the organist tearing it up every night. And he's actually a New Orleans native, not an Atlanta native. tearing it up on the Oregon every night, but still their crowds were terrible. Their crowds were terrible when their team won 60 games when Danny Ferry was running the team. So don't give me, it doesn't even have anything to do with the quality of a sports town either.
No.
I think it all boils down to the fact that we had to trade Chris Paul and then immediately got Anthony Davis. And now we have to trade Anthony Davis and immediately get Zion. So there's just that like jealousy thing. And sure, there was like a lot of problems that led to both of those guys wanting to be traded. But we also fixed most of those problems, or at least are in the process of doing it. But it's just the idea, I think, that people can't stomach outside of here, that, you know, these two transcendental stars who were the top of their position rankings at the time and were still young, you know, wanted out and then immediately were replaced with another superstar to build around. You know, it's just that, it's just jealousy somewhat, but also, you know, frustration because of the way that it played out, I think, also plays into it.
One other thing we got to really add to this, and I feel like it really is a prevailing issue for a lot of these outsiders, is the fact that the Pelicans, or I should say the Hornets, were owned by the NBA. It was so bad, the situation here, that the NBA had to step in. David Stern, when he kind of went outside of his, you know, responsibilities, a lot of people felt, especially when he canceled that first Chris Paul trade. And I feel like that has followed. I feel like it's things like that. David Stern then speaking out, saying Dell Demps, terrible GM. You know, at every turn, there's somebody like that or something like that happens. So it's more than just basketball, for sure. It's more than just not fulfilling, you know, the prophecies of these two great generational stars, you know. So I really think until you win a little bit consistently, New Orleans is never going to shake this.
Well, the good thing is that the Pelicans have the number one pick and everybody else can go suck it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Just take a good long slurpy suck. Okay, now let's move on to what we actually came to discuss. And now that the lottery is over, we're gonna have to start looking at what are the next steps. And obviously, one of the big dominoes, if not the biggest domino, is the destination for Anthony Davis. So what we're going to be doing over these next few podcasts is looking at particular teams and what we each view as their best possible trade packages. We're going to discuss those packages and then maybe try to come on to some consensus by moving some pieces around and seeing what we like as to what the best deal may be by putting our four heads together on this. Today, we're going to cover two teams, the Brooklyn Nets and the Toronto Raptors. We're going to start with Brooklyn, since their season has ended, and Toronto has a lot more variables going on depending how their season ends. So let's go to the person who I think has the most Brooklyn love in him.
Yes.
That's Mr. Kevin Berrios. Kevin, why don't you give us what you think the Pelicans and the Nets could do for in an AD deal?
Sure. I mean, I pitched a few during the season, and I thought before the trade deadline, acquiring D'Angelo Russell would have been great. But now that that's all passed, I created a new one. And now we're also doing this sort of in order of desirability, I think, to some degree, although obviously it's differing between all of us and where these teams slot. But I think we all agree that Brooklyn is on the lower end of desirability because of the issues that we're dealing with, sort of, you know, the D'Angelo Russell's contract situation, their draft picks that they have, those sort of things. So what I tried to do is put together a team where you're bringing over a ton of that culture from Brooklyn. You're bringing over that hard work, hard play, a lot of ball handling. You're filling a ton of holes on the roster. You may not be getting that big name star, but I think there's a sneaky possible star in there in Caris LeVert. Who is basically the prize of my package. I think I've read a lot of Brooklyn writing this season and some other guys also that just gravitated toward that team from other teams. And a lot of people think that Caris LeVert is actually the best player on the Nets. And, you know, he's a little bit older. He has an injury history. So those are concerns, but he's a great ball handler. He can get to the rim. He's a good scorer. He's an adequate defender. he's not an incredible jump shooter, but he has gone on streaks where his numbers were really high. So he's the focal point of players. But then you also so basically what the Pelicans would be sending out in this trade first is Anthony Davis and Etuan Moore. And then the Pelicans in return would get Joe Harris, which I think is a slight upgrade over Etuan Moore. He's a little bit taller. He's a lot better off the ball. He cuts a lot better. He moves a lot better. He gets himself open a lot easier. He's a better and more consistent outside shooter. And I feel like he doesn't fluctuate as much when he's starting and off and coming off the bench, whereas we've seen Etuan have those crazy dips when he was shuffled around. So I think he's better at filling multiple roles. He doesn't have that mid-range game or that floater game that Etuan has. And he's, you know, but other than that, I think he's more of, you know, your modern NBA guy, cuts to layups and 3-point shooting, no mid-range game. So I think he slightly upgrades Etuan. Then of course you get Jared Allen, potential solid rim running, rim protecting center, Caris LeVert, which I already discussed, who I think is the prize of the package. Spencer Dinwiddie, who would give you your answer at point guard, which is a position that needs to be addressed for sure. We want to have a good point guard in there to help Zion develop and also unlock Drew, not make him have to play that. And he gives you size at the point. He's a great attacking guard. He's an okay defender. He's getting better as a shooter. And then there's Karuks, who's a, you know, he's a forward. He could play both forward positions. He's got an outside shot. He's a pretty good ball handler, a pretty good passer for his position. He's young, could possibly develop into a solid starter at some point, or at least, you know, a guy that's going to get good minutes. He got a lot of good minutes for Brooklyn this season. And then we get the 17 pick this season. Phoenix's second round pick in 2021 and the Nets 2022 first round pick. Now, also in this deal, I have a variation where Alan Crabb would then go to the Suns, and the Suns would get Denver's first round pick this season, which is number 27, which the Nets own, and also a second round pick from the New York Knicks. And then the Pelicans would get from the Suns TJ Warren, who I've obviously liked for a very long time, but I think he also helps open up things for Zion because he can play both forward positions. He can come off the bench or he could start at small forward, but he's a good outside shooter and he can score from all over. So he eases that burden a little bit. And he's a sort of decent ball handler, playmaker. So that's basically the package. Like I said, it's not big name star heavy, but it fills multiple holes across the roster. Then you still have future picks and you have a guy that might turn into a star in Caris LeVert, and who would definitely be you know, the best wing player we've had probably ever at this point. Anybody want to comment on those?
Yeah, Ollie, if you want to give feedback on that one and then give us yours.
Yeah, I'm totally with Kevin that Caris LeVert is my catch as well. I talked to Stu Jackson when he's coming out of the draft, and I love LeVert. And then when I talked to Stu Jackson, he made me really love him, talking about his potential. If he could just stay away from the injuries, you know, if he could just stay healthy, and because he had all the tools, he had all that athleticism, and we really saw it at the start of this year. I mean, I remember him carrying games in October and November, and that's when D'Angelo Russell actually started really poorly. And I thought it was unanimous that people thought LeVert was going to be the star of that team and that he was going to be the one guy that they wouldn't trade. Well, look what, you know, basically 4 months later, here we are. Now it looks like D'Angelo Russell's the one that they should retain. LeVert's kind of a toss-up, even though I don't think they're not out on his future. But, again, he's the catch, and so he's in my package. I've got a simpler one. I'm just trading Anthony Davis. And getting back Crab, you got to make the salaries work. But LeVert, and then I love this guy too, Kuroks. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. I don't think anybody ever probably has. But I think that he's another fine catch. I mean, you want a long forward, right? And this guy fits the bill. I've heard nothing but positives. But even more, I have found out that David Griffin loves this guy. When he was on doing radio shows with Joel Myers, I caught an episode, one of those deals and dunks on Saturday. They talked about this guy, and Griffin absolutely raved about him. So I know that he loves him. I love him. When you watch this guy play, he's got the potential. 21 years old. He shot over 50% from two. And, you know, he's got to get a lot stronger. He needs to add like 20 pounds or so, you want to say. But his shot looks good. So that 31% three-point field goal percentage, that's going to come up as well. And to round out that deal, so Crabbe, LeVert, Kurucs, the three players, and then I want a couple picks from the Nets. I want their first rounder, the 17th overall, and then via the Knicks, I want the second rounder, 31st. And I want them to chase maybe like Bol Bol, you know, maybe chase somebody just to fill in the holes on the rest of the roster.
All right, so now we move on to Fish. Fish, I want you to review Ollie's deal and then give us yours.
I hate to be the downer on both his and Kevin's deal, but I think we ask for too much from the Nets because I think the Nets are really going to value that culture and they're not going to want to chop it all away. So, and it gets really hard, especially when you start throwing in LeVert and a lot of cheap guys. I know one of the things that that Ollie managed to do is taking back that Crabbe deal, which I think the Nets would be more interested in. For me, what I would be doing with the Nets pick, with the Nets trade, is my headline is going to be D'Angelo Russell. Probably the 2016 draft. I was saying, hey, if the Pelicans can get Russell for their pick, they should do it, and they should do it right away.
I remember that.
And that was kind of in the beginning of the Drew's not a point guard, we need a real point guard beside him situation in New Orleans. Because initially it was Drew's point guard. And then 2016, that was probably right after Gentry's first season. That had gone sideways since they were picking in the lottery. And there were rumors that, hey, the Lakers might want to move Russell for a high enough pick and they might be eyeing either Heald or Murray. So I was like, hey, let's go after Russell. He's a big guard. He doesn't come without his problems or his airport issues or his recreational issues. and the other part of that is the fact that it has to be a sign and trade, which is the more difficult part because you have to convince Russell that, hey, you're going to come here and come sign with us, but you're not going to be the number one guy. Because, I mean, Zion's coming. He's going to be the number one guy. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the guy that's leading in usage or anything like that. But he's going to be the guy that comes in with the shoe deal and all the media attention, et cetera. And so it's going to take, you know, some
overpay,
possibly an overpay. And the other thing is that it requires other pieces. Pretty much, it requires the Nets wanting to do it because Kyrie's on the way. Pretty much. So hey, we have Kyrie on the way. We need to open up the space, anyways. Can you guys take some salary back, Crabbe? And, you know, we'll do the sign and trade with Russell so we don't have to really worry about his cap hold. And then we'll slide in Kyrie and we'll have Kyrie and Davis in Brooklyn. Now, that's still anti-ethical. I mean, it's not in line with how they've built the team. It's not in line with, if you've read, like, Brooklyn coverage stuff, what they want to do. I would think that which is why there's not a lot coming back in my trade. I have the Pelicans receiving D'Angelo Russell via the sign and trade. Harris, obviously, he slots right in as your starting shooting small forward. Crabbe to eat that money for them to make it more enticing for them, but you're going to send Hill to them, Solomon Hill. But that is, you know, a positive on the net of they're taking, you know, they're slicing off about $6 million on that. And then, like they've, both Kevin and Ollie have said, the Nets 17th pick and then the Nets 2021 pick with as light of protections as you can talk down on them, probably like protections 1 through 4, assuming that the lottery still remains the same the way that it is. So, yeah, Russell, Harris, Crabbe, and then the Nets 2019 and 2021 for Anthony Davis and Hill. And I've been preaching this to you guys in our chat all the time. I think that getting a point guard that is relatively within the age range and the time frame of Zion is critical to unlocking Zion. It's the thing that they failed to do with Anthony Davis because Tyreek's head was down too much. Drew suddenly developed into not wanting to be a point guard, and they didn't have what Davis needed. I mean, Davis had a great individual career in New Orleans, but it didn't lead to team success like you would like. And I would think that a backcourt of D'Angelo Russell and Drew Holiday with Zion up front would be great. And then obviously Harris helping spread the floor, and he's relatively cheap. So that's where my deal would be.
I think we're all similarly in tune with this one, because for me, you know, again, one of the things I consider too is the financial flexibility, because to me, over these next 3 to 4 years, it's not just enough to have talent. It's also how can the Pelicans, you know, ultimately leverage some of this talent. I don't think everybody that they bring in these trades is long for the team. In some regard, these are flippable assets, or some are just, hey, to create cap room for, you know, potential free agents down the road. So just like Kevin and Ollie, my Pelicans going out are Anthony Davis and Etuan Moore. And then for the Nets, Allen Crabbe, again, 1 year, $18.5 million. That's an easy pill to swallow, basically, if you're the Pelicans. Caris LeVert, 1 year with, what, $2.6 million this year, and then the qualifying offer the year after that. So, again, very affordable. Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris. Joe Harris, 1 year, $7.6 million. Spencer Dinwiddie, 2 years at roughly $22 million total. So, and then the two first-round picks, the same. The 17 this year, and then the number one in 2021. So yeah, I'm looking at it from if you walk away with Dinwiddie, LeVert, and two picks, and maybe you resign Harris if it works out. I think that's a very good outcome in that regard for the Pelicans. Since we're all generally in consensus. Are we thinking then? Because the Russell deal, while you'd like to have that talent, it's the most, as you said, David, it's the most dependent on other factors.
Yeah,
So convincing Russell, all those things makes it the most difficult.
I love Russell, but I think like the thing is like if you're making this trade with the Nets, it's because they know that they're getting Durant and possibly Kyrie Irving, so they're building a super team. They're going away from what they were doing, was building this homegrown culture. It's going to be a radical shift. So I think the thing is when you start to talk about Russell, you have to talk to him and get him to agree to a sign and trade. Now, if the thing falls apart, then you have a disgruntled player on your hands. I think that's what makes that more difficult. And that's why I shied away from it as much as I like Russell.
I don't want to short sell that. I would love Caris LeVert. The Buckeye and me choosing a Wolverine over a Buckeye hurts. I would love Caris LeVert over and above D'Angelo Russell. You know, the injury things and stuff like that. That he's dealt with. Hey, you got Aaron Nelson. That's the perfect guy that you would want to have in a situation where you have a guy that's had the kind of history that LeVert does. I didn't include LeVert in my trade because I was trying to make one that I felt like the Nets are more likely to say yes to, pretty much.
I also think that there's a trade here where that doesn't involve Anthony Davis. So you make the Anthony Davis trade with another partner. But by taking Crabbe, you can maybe possibly get LeVert. You know, they could keep Russell, they could keep Dinwiddie, or move them to other places if they're getting, you know, if they can add one more star. Say they just are adding one, if they're adding just Durant to what they already have, then, you know, moving Crabbe over, they surely would be fine with trading off LeVert for Durant, you know, and you facilitating that. So, that's something I would also consider. It's another move based after you make another move for Anthony Davis, you know?
That would be a situation like if you make the Davis trade to someplace that you're bringing in a lot of draft capital. Mm-hmm. You take some of that draft capital and you attach it to a cheaper contract. Let's say the Pelicans are going to have enough cap room after the Anthony Davis trade where you can send one of those picks that you got from, say, the Knicks or something, and Etuan Moore, who is serviceable on an expiring contract and a lot cheaper than Crabb, and you tell the Nets, hey, we're going to give you this first and more, and we're going to eat the $10 million, which is the cap space that you need, but we need something in return, and the thing we need in return is Caris LeVert.
Yeah, I mean, I the way I looked at this whole exercise is you grab the one young star, right? You grab the Tatum. For some people's eyes, even though I don't get it, is Ingram. You know, stuff like that. So LeVert fits that mold. So I don't think he's got superstar potential, guys. I really don't. So I just think he's that star kind of potential youngster that can maybe make a couple all-star games, maybe three at the most. And, of course, Kurix, I don't think that's wrong to say that, hey, you're grabbing a young talent that's tantalizing. And then just a couple of picks. I feel like that's the kind of the model that, you know, is the template you're going to use for Anthony Davis. And that's what I just stuck to right here. But
yeah,
I think we spent enough time on Brooklyn, honestly. I don't think a deal's going to happen with them. It's going to all depend on, like Kevin's always said, and David, you too, on who else they can attract another star. Because they're not going to break up that culture just for any kind of maybes. It's got to be something, okay, this is worth that jump.
Yeah, but we've got a lot of time, and we can do these exercises. So, and then if one of these things comes to pass, we want to be able to have said that we analyzed it properly and we made our points about it. So, yes, but we can move on now from Brooklyn and on to the Great White North into the six and deal with the Toronto Raptors. This time, let's start with Dave Fisher, and let's see what would you have the Pelicans do to make a deal with the Raptors.
My Raptors trade is much simpler. Sending out Anthony Davis alone and then bringing back in, and this is a little, some of the contracts aren't as attractive as others, but you have to, the thing with a Raptors trade that you have to think of, unless you start adding a third team and et cetera, is if the Raptors are making this trade, then they feel like they're going to be able to resign Kawhi. Pretty much, but yes, they want another star. So mm-hmm. they're going to sacrifice some depth. And, you know, I mean, we all know that the gem of the trade on this one is going to be Siakam beside Zion. but they're going to sacrifice some depth around that to bring in AD, the big star. The only way they're going to do that is if they feel like we're going to be able to retain Kawhi along with, you know, Lowry and, I mean, Anthony Davis and Lowry and Kawhi and Gasol, that's a fun lineup. Like, that's a basketball team that I would want to watch.
And if they can keep Danny Green, too.
Danny Green situation like that. So my trade with the Raptors would be sending Anthony Davis out. And this trade is going to be a trade that takes effect after the draft. So the Raptors, they owe their draft pick this year. But after the draft, like, you know, June 30th at 6 p.m. or whatever, they can trade their 2020 pick. And one of the things that I've always been working on is I want the Pelicans to have not too many picks in one single draft, but hopefully multiple firsts throughout the future as much as possible, because you want to have a continuing flow of young talent to fill out the roster, because that was the era of the Anthony Davis era. So what I would want first from the Raptors is we want Siakam. That's the guy we have to have. And then your 2020 and 2022 first, I think we can get away with relatively light protections, because if they're trading for Anthony Davis, they're re-signing Kawhi. They know they're going to be good. So their two picks, Siakam, and then you just have to really match salary. The easiest way to match salary would be Van Fleet and Powell. Powell, I mean, that contract looks like it might be a little dirty, but when you're acquiring somebody like that, which has a relatively big cap number, but it expires between now and when Zion's rookie deal expires, you're opening up cap space in the future. How are you going to build around? How are you going to continue to build around Zion Williamson? Maybe in 2 or 3 years when Powell's contract is an expiring contract, hey, that's a nice chip to throw in some other trade so that you can get a veteran back that's available from some team that just wants to open up cap space. And then I also have bringing in OG and Anunoby along with that trade. So bring in Van Fleet and Anunoby, Siakam, Powell, 2 firsts from Toronto in 2020 and 2022 for Anthony Davis.
All right. I guess, Kevin, I will let you go next. And
I have the exact same trade, honestly. It's word for word, the same trade. Now, I love Siakam, and my only issue with this trade, I mean, it's the trade that I put together, and I like these guys, but now that I know that we have Zion and that's the piece we're building around, it makes it a little bit less attractive for me, just because while I think defensively you're creating a great team, I just worry about scoring and spacing because you're not getting anything from shooting wise from Anunoby and Siakam. But if Siakam, you have to wait on Siakam and Zion to develop consistent outside jumpers for one of them to have space. Now, defensively and other things that they do is great and it's going to be fun, but I think it's just going to be a lot of clutter. And we've seen like Van Vliet's been falling apart in the playoffs this year. Now he could bounce back next year. I mean, he's basically going to be on an expiring anyway, so it's not like he's really a long-term piece, but it would be nice if you could find a guy that could be a long-term contributor at point guard instead of like every year having a new point guard. And then Powell, like David said, he's an okay player, nothing special about him. His contract's a little bit too high, but it's not terrible, and it's something that you can combine later on with something else to attract a better player when you're more in a position to make that jump. But I think when you're making this trade, you're definitely banking on Siakam or Zion or both finally developing like a really good outside jumper, because I don't see it really working offensively long term if neither of them do.
Well, I think you're right. You got to have some shooting in there. I'm gonna let Ollie close.
No, go ahead, David. I'll finish up. Yeah, I'll finish up this time.
You're gonna close this one. So my deal was a little bit different. I'm sending out AD and Etwan to Toronto, and in return, I'm taking fewer players back than you guys. But I'll explain to you why. I'm taking back Van Vliet and Siakam, but I'm also taking back Serge Ibaka. Ibaka's got 1 year and $23 million on his contract. There are two things that I know he can do fairly well. He can protect the rim some. He's still a decent rim protector. And he can shoot the three fairly well. But he's an expiring, and he's a vet. So bringing him in, to me, he takes up that big chunk of salary. But at the midway point, when you get to the trade deadline, he has no value to the Pelicans, in my opinion, long term. But in that short term, I can flip him at the deadline to a team looking for veteran inside help and get more assets back. So that's what I'm thinking there, is to get more assets out of Ibaka and have that salary off my books, and then get the 2021 and 2023 picks. Going along with what Fisher said, I want to continue to have picks in years where, you know, I'm assuring that I'm going to keep my influx of young talent, and also have the position to be able to flip those picks if I have enough talent at that time. So that's my thought.
Yeah, David, I concur with you on getting Ibaka back, but I'm sending out, instead of Etwan Moore with AD, I'm sending out Solomon Hill. I want his contract gone, because we're not getting too many. We're not getting that bright, youthful type of grouping like we did with the Brooklyn Nets. Because I've also got Siakam, of course, with Ibaka, and then Powell, who I'm actually a little bit higher on than you guys. I thought he had a kind of an under the radar type of year. And again, I've heard rumors that, you know, people generally like this kid. After the season he had, he just wasn't able to be showcased enough, simply because if you look at, you know, obviously the talent, especially with Kawhi Leonard being added. But he made a lot of vast improvements, three-point shooting, I heard. His defense went up a notch. He's kind of the kind of guy you want coming off the bench for maybe 20, 25 minutes if need be. and of course in two draft picks. But I'm focusing more on a 2021 first rounder. So I'm just going to grab the 2020 second round pick. But the 2021, obviously, is I'm going to be banking on the AD's not going to stay there long term. You know, I'm going to say that out of all the scenarios we're going to do, Toronto's going to be the least likely that Anthony Davis decides to stay in. So I don't think we're going to be able to ask for too much. And again, I don't foresee in any way, shape, or scenario that Masai is going to do this deal, give up Siakam, if he can't get pretty much a guarantee from AD that he's going to stay, or be able to persuade him to stay with the roster that he can build around him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's highly dependent on Kawhi. If the Raptors make the finals this year and Kawhi says he's staying, then you don't get many more cosmopolitan cities in Toronto. And you still have access to the New York market when you're in Toronto. You have access to, I mean, yes, there's some big hitters. And again, Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. It doesn't matter what market he's in. If he's looking at marketability, he's just not a really marketable star, in my opinion. Well, no matter what uniform you put on him.
The thing is, though, he would have a whole country that he would be marketing for instead of like a single market. You know, that's the entire country of Canada.
Look what they did.
Hockey and curling.
Look what they did for DeMar DeRozan, who has no personality. But he's a national hero in Canada.
He was a homegrown David. He was a homegrown talent. This is AD coming in with baggage.
They don't care.
Kawhi went in baggage, though. I mean, like, look at Kawhi the year that Kawhi had before he went there. I mean, he went in with baggage as well, you could say.
These are Canadians, man. They love everybody.
I would also say Toronto is an awesome city, especially,
it's awesome for
especially
sure.
If you like dumplings. Like,
there's no way AD's going to love it there, man. L.A. home. He's the guy that is going to hate walking outside in December and January when it's cold as hell.
He's from Chicago.
AD is not used to that weather anymore. He doesn't live there anymore.
You don't ever forget, man. You don't ever forget.
You remember and you hate and you never go back.
In the winter, you don't.
Now, I think, you know.
It's also, not that far from Buffalo, the home of the Buffalo Wings.
Exactly. He's right there at Niagara Falls. He's right there at Niagara Falls. And he can go over to the Sky Dome.
Oh, that took me a minute.
And watch the Blue Jays. And then there's Toronto Argonauts football for him. And the Maple Leafs. Anthony Davis is getting everything he wants in Toronto. It's a fine city.
You guys are completely wrong. His parents will hate it there. Rich Paul's not going to want to fly up there. No. No.
Rich Paul gets to fly for free. He sits in the children's seat.
He has to go through immigration every time he's got to go see his client.
I mean, if we're talking about shoe deals, the thing is that Kawhi isn't a Nike client. He's a New Balance client. So that might actually be something that's a positive to them. And Toronto's, I want to say they're the third largest metropolitan area in North America, just behind New York and LA. Like, it doesn't get much bigger than Toronto in terms of consumers, people that you will be marketed to.
I don't see how it's a bad place to get traded to now. I mean, you look at when you look at the amount of people that gather to watch a basketball game in the streets in Toronto. I mean, you have it, like you said, you have an excited fan base, you have a great arena, you have a great city. And again, at the end of the day, I don't care about Anthony Davis's feelings. It's where you're going, and that's wherever the Pelicans ship him. But if he's if he can't be content, if he couldn't find something to like in Toronto, then that's on him, and that's not on the city.
I mean, you guys, I don't know. I just think that we're talking about 20 millionaires that are in their 20s.
True.
And they think they can live anywhere. They're not going to pick Toronto. I just don't see it. Sorry. I know that we all love the city.
He said he wanted to go to a winning team, and the Toronto Raptors have won at least 50 games for the last 4 years straight. They've made the playoffs 6 consecutive years. They are by far a much better franchise and organization than the Knicks or the Lakers. The Knicks and the Lakers just have history.
Yeah, the
Raptors have.
Also, as a basketball fit, Kawhi is a better fit for him than anybody else. Outside of Giannis, I think, I think that's the person I would like to see him paired with the most as purely a basketball fan.
And see, I disagree. He needs a total alpha point guard that can get him the ball on command. I really do. I think a small forward that has decent playmaking. I mean, you can't compare Kawhi Leonard or anybody else, even Giannis, to say a Rondo or somebody. You know what I mean? They're still going to look for their own shot. They're still going to take up more usage than you.
But
in that way, I don't think that's going to sit well with AD.
If your lineup is Lowry, Gasol, and Leonard,
that's what I'm saying.
All of those passes, all of those guys, because you can put Gasol at the high post and have him throw passes to AD all night long.
And Danny Green as well.
Yeah, because we saw it again, when Memphis played the Pelicans. How often did Gasol hit Jaren Jackson Jr. for lobs against those same Pelicans with AD on the baseline? Because no one could guard Gasol up top, and they were just running those lobs to the back door. I think AD would get plenty of chances with those guys because, again, Lowry in the pick and roll can find him, Gasol up top, and then you can post up Kawhi, and he can kick out to AD in those jump shot areas that he really likes.
And Kawhi could run pick and roll with him too. I mean, see that?
No, I think if, and then another thing. Long term for the Raptors, if they're trading for Anthony Davis, is Anthony Davis the defender, if he's actually engaged, really extends the life of Mark Gasol as a functional NBA player on both ends of the court. Whereas, I mean, he has an expiration date if he doesn't have somebody that can kind of prop him up defensively. And Anthony Davis, if he's fully engaged, can do that.
I agree. Well, that's our first edition of this. We got several other teams to go through. We'll be hitting, you know, the usual suspects, the Celtics, the Knicks, the Lakers. We'll be going through those and with some wild card teams as well.
The Clippers.
Of course, the Clippers. So
the Nuggets.
We'll be going through all of them. We'll be doing all the teams. We'll get not all 29. We're not going to do.
No, sorry, Anthony.
They're all on the table.
Even though, yes, he says they're all on the table. We're not going to do all 29, but we will be, over the next several days, we'll be churning these out with different teams and different trade ideas. Please give us your feedback on Twitter @TheBirdRights. Guys, is there anything else we want to say before we close this one out? Ollie?
We've got Zion Williamson coming soon. That's all I keep thinking about on and off, you know. So I don't think it's going to go away until well after the draft.
Kevin, anything you want to go off on?
No, man, I'm good.
Dave, what you got?
Oh, man, look, I just got an email alert earlier this afternoon. Dirty Coast is already printing Zion T-shirts. Mine is already on the way. Go get yours, too. And go Pels.
I guess I would leave it up to Bob Marley on this one. He said, marching like an iron lion in Zion, right? That's a Bob Marley lyric. So I guess we've got the iron lion in Zion coming to New Orleans. Sitting in once again for our dear friend, Preston Ellis, I am David Grubb. And this has been the Bird Calls. Guys, thank you very much. And until the next time, let's go Pels.
Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Who am I and how am I feeling? I'm Clive Owen and I'm feeling great, thanks. How about you? You feeling happy? A little angry? People have so many feelings, millions of them. But what if businesses could really understand all of those feelings and then act on them to make their customers feel better? It's a thing. It's SAP Experience Management and it's here. Because the future of business has feelings. And I've got a feeling we're all going to like it. Go to sap.com/XM to learn more.
We see the news that teen vaping's on the rise, but teens see something else. Internet videos that talk up fun flavors and downplay the dangers of nicotine. How can parents talk so kids will listen? Use facts. 1. Nicotine can rewire teens' brains. 2. It can make kids more anxious. 3. Changes to the brain can be permanent. So even when it tastes like candy, nicotine is brain poison. Go to flavorshookkids.org for more.